Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man is out of time.
Which direction we are going?
Direct me El Camino. It would have been DWI.
Reached a tipping point.
Good evening. Good evening. Did you miss us? We missed you. This is the tipping point. Tonight, of course, joined. I'm Stephen Platinum, and I'm joined, as always, by the venerable and full of holiday spirit man himself, Larry Goodman. Larry, how are you tonight?
I'm okay. I'm sorry, though, that we do not, once again, do not have the lovely Rachel Freeman with us here tonight to counteract my venerableness, but we don't.
Speaking of counteracting venerableness, just a full use of vocabulary tonight. AWE, I'm just going to go ahead and just open up right off the bat. Show of the year two. Larry, you were there on Sunday. The last show that's going to be in the quad, as the quad is closing at the end of the year. And AWE, this is going to shock a lot of people. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. They delivered the goods and then some. That's what it sounded like to me. What did you see at the ground level there?
I think they knocked it out of the park. It had a lot to live up to because, boy, it was a great lineup on paper, and would they bring it in the ring? And they certainly brought it in the ring and everywhere else at the quad. Oh, my God. Yes, it was quite a show. And
I think every league needs to have that show. They need to know that they can always point to for the rest of the end and go like, that really launched us. And you know, often leagues sort of pretend a show is that show, that really great one, that, you know, it's sort of a culmination show, sort of a showcase event. And AWE has now had theirs. And, you know, a fitting way to close the quad. I mean, I got to give it up to those guys. They got what you want, which is great matchups on paper, built up angles, and payoffs all across the board. What are things that stood out to you, Larry, about show of the year, too?
The double dog collar match was unforgettable. The level of violence there and mayhem was something to behold, and that they built this story up, that they then kept these guys apart leading into the show, and then they just let it all loose there in that main event, and that they moved it to the main event, I thought was a really the right decision by AWE to make that the main. You know, as you and I talked earlier today, had it been Raven Gunner, as good as that match was, it would have been some of a letdown in the sense of it was sort of like the typical Rave match, and that, you know, Gunner gets kind of screwed there, and then Rave, you know, kind of rolls, you know, not kind of, but, you know, plays possum and rolls him up. But that would not have been the way to end the show. So,
yeah,
that was great. And I, you know, the Fans of Wrestling Guys did a live recap last night, a live show on the network here talking about it. And I called in just briefly, and the one thing that amazed me, well, a number of things that amazed me, one that would amaze me was the shooting star press by Lince Dorado, where he had to adjust for the low ceiling and somehow figure out how to get that shooting star press under that ceiling, and damn if he didn't nail it perfect.
That guy is amazing. When I was watching the Lucha Dragons last night, and just noticing a couple of things, I went, you know, Lince Dorado, if you, I mean, the guy that they have playing Sin Cara now is fine and all, but honestly, I think you could slip Lince Dorado in that role and he would knock it out of the park. That's how good that guy is. And I mean, Lince Dorado was not even really advertised for that show. It was just that show. They had like, I would say three matches that were kind of the showcase ones, you know, Chip Day and Cedric, certainly the Dog Collar, and then Jimmy Raven Gunner. But then, and I'm sorry, Marty Bell against Ashton Starr as well. But, I mean, they stacked that thing to the gills, and everything, I mean, from your perspective, paid off handsomely.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't mention in the review was that the pacing, I mean, that was a heck of a lot of matches. What, 10 on the main show, 2 pre-show?
Yeah.
And they started on time, and if memory serves correctly, it was done by about 9:30, which, given all they had to do, was pretty good. It didn't really drag with all of that stuff. And, of course, the AWE crowd is usually bonzo anyway, and they were for this show. But in a different way to me, the AWE crowd, I mean, they were really into the show and into the show being the show. And it was just a wonderful crowd to be a part of, and a wonderful atmosphere for a wrestling show. And I can see why a lot of performers want to come to AWE, whether they got 50 people there or 100 or whatever. And, of course, this last time it was 100. It's a hell of an atmosphere to work in. Yes.
You know, hitting your stride and evolving is all part of groups. And often I think AWE suffered from a thing that a lot of groups suffer from, which is you think you know it all. And then you kind of find out that stuff is harder than you thought. You know, AWE errs on the side of giving the boys a lot of control. And in some ways, that's a bad thing. But boy, sometimes it pays off. And last night, you know, it came up all cherries. And it was just one of those where the boys were very committed to doing the very best job. You know, the post-show promo by Huckabee, where he put over Wheeler and everything else going on. I mean, it's the show of your dreams. It's the show that you want. Now, it was interesting to me. I don't know if you want to talk about this a little bit, Larry, but like Josh Wheeler even mentioning the sort of financials of AWE during his closing promo. How did that come across with the live crowd, him talking about the finances?
You know, it didn't get a discernible reaction because there was so much going on in that post-match.
Yeah.
I'm sure that, you know, people caught it, but it wasn't anything that was, like, made a major deal of. But, I mean, it was, he definitely put it out there clear and simple that they've got to restructure their business model in 2016 and that they will be taking somewhat of a hiatus, undetermined as far as I know, unannounced, let's say, after the January 10th show.
Okay.
Which will be,
and the January 10th show is going to be, where is it going to be?
On Campbellton Road. So they're, you know, they'll be moving to a different venue for this show, where they're bringing in Gargano to wrestle Chip Day and Tommaso Ciampa. I'm not sure who Ciampa's working. I'm not up on that. But, yeah, so, you know, I took it to mean that they've got to get their talent budget under control and more in line, to get the expenses in line with what they're bringing in the door. They, you know, I mean, when somebody says they got to restructure their business, I'm assuming that that's what they're talking about. They've got to do a better job controlling expenses.
To me, the one strange thing was, you know, there was this push to sell out Quad, as they put it, and they said that was 250 people. I've been in that space before. You couldn't fit 250 people in there. If you got those, I mean, if you got the Harvard, like those guys who used to stuff the phone booths in the 50s, you couldn't fit 250 people in that space. I think that was more of a financial consideration of, Jesus, this is what we would need. But I don't know, the Quad, they made that space. Gonna be interesting going forward. What are your thoughts about, I mean, that community center or whatever, that's gotta be a stopgap, right? I can't imagine that's gonna where they're gonna try to make home base. You?
Yeah, if it's a typical, I've never been in that place, of course, but if it's what I'm thinking of as a community center, and I know that he did say that it holds many more people than the Quad. I want to say he threw out a figure of 300. And it's got high ceilings, which is certainly a good thing, but you're clearly not going to recreate the ambiance of the Quad in this community center, so I would hope that it's not their longer-term plan for a home base.
Well, nonetheless, I mean, AWE really knocked it out of the park. Other shows of note that I heard about was Peach State. Sounds like they're full steam ahead, and they put on a great show as well on Saturday. You know, headlined by, and again, I think in both AWE and Peach State made an interesting choice where the main event really didn't center around the title and Jimmy Rave. It centered around, you know, the match between Iceberg and Dusty McWilliams, which was said to be an incredibly violent affair. I think, you know, the unprotected chair shots. It's one of those things where instinctively in the modern era, I know how horrible that is, that both shows had these like brutal unprotected chair shots. But if I'm being honest, I'm a wrestling guy. And I mean, I always tell guys, don't do unprotected chair shots. Don't do them. But damned if they aren't exciting. I know that I'm a bad person for saying that, but man, apparently Iceberg and Dusty McWilliams just went to town with the chairs. And then the finish was Iceberg coming off the top rope with a splash with a chair underneath him on poor Dusty McWilliams. Yeah. So that was the finish there. So, and Peach State putting on an exciting show.
Any other highlights from that show? I've not seen a report on that Peach State show. Anything else you heard about it?
You know, of course, I talked to Jeff G about it, so I heard mostly about what Jeff G did. speaking of which, PCW this Saturday has a show, and I'm going to be there. It's going to be me, Jeff, and Carpenter all together. So mayhem is sure to ensue. I kind of wanted to talk about Larry, if I could, without getting into nitty gritty details. This is just going to be a general statement, and the people that know what I'm talking about will know, and the people that don't can probably find out. So there's been this push recently by a fan to sort of hurt a guy who's, I guess it's safe to say, prominent on the Georgia scene, a guy who books, a guy who runs shows. And there's been a push from this guy to sort of get this Georgia performer out of shows. And apparently it's working. I'm just going to speak my mind on this here at the end of the year. First of all, fuck that guy. It's no secret that there's a number of people on the scene who have had pasts, sort of criminal pasts and just really unsavory stuff that they've done time for and all the rest of it. And I know that there are certain hot button issues where you're guaranteed to get a rise and guaranteed to get a reaction. I just got to say this notion that people need to judge other people and affect their ability to redeem themselves. I think Jimmy Rave is a good example of a guy who has kind of fallen off the wagon, then gotten back on. And imagine if people just decided, you know what, Jimmy Rave, like this last time where he sort of fell down about a year ago, year and a half ago. And what if people made this concerted effort to say, you know, I don't think Jimmy Rave's a good influence. I don't think Jimmy Rave should be there. That's my personal judgment. We would have never had this story, you know. We would have never had an opportunity to see Jimmy Rave not only kind of get himself back together and contribute to wrestling and that stuff, but really provide an example of there is such a thing as a second chance, and there is such a thing as pro wrestling that can, in a way that it can work in a positive way. And how many guys have benefited from this last run by Jimmy? How much has Jimmy Rave benefited from being able to kind of go into wrestling rings with his head held high and contribute in a meaningful way? I mean, if we're being honest, that guy's going to win Wrestler of the Year in the state, and he absolutely deserves it. And the thought that people, particularly a fucking fan, is going to take it upon themselves to deny guys an opportunity to redeem themselves. I'm not talking about pieces of shit who hide the fact that they're a molester or hide the fact that they're statutory rapers. I'm talking about guys who have made mistakes and been public about it and then make a concerted effort to improve everything around them and make amends. To deny those guys a chance to do that, I just have no respect for that whatsoever. I don't know what your thoughts are. I mean, I know you know who I'm talking about, Larry. I mean, what are your general thoughts about it?
Well, I think, okay, so I'm in the counseling field, and I've counseled and work with mostly people with severe and persistent mental illness who often aren't thought of as having, or at least in the past, not so much now, I think that's changed, but much chances of recovering rehabilitation. And I have to look at it as everybody has the opportunity of recovering rehabilitation. Not everybody makes it, not everybody does it, but everybody should have the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, just to recap what we're going to talk about in this show, tonight we announced the official nominations for the Georgia Wrestling History Awards. Very excited about that. But we're going to have Paul Adams on again, who's a frequent guest here on Tipping Point. Larry, do you want to talk about what he's going to talk about tonight?
Well, Paul's going to bring us up to date a little bit on what's going on the Tennessee scene. He's recently got involved with a promotion called Tried and True Wrestling, TNT, which is doing very well in Tennessee. And he's going to fill us a bit on what's going on there. Maybe tell us a little bit what happened on his Christmas show with Miss Grumpy Bail Bonds, Leah Hulin. I don't know if he'll talk about that, but we'll see. And whatever he's going to talk about, he's going to be talking about it now. Welcome to the Tipping Point from the great state of Tennessee, Paul Adams. How are you doing tonight?
Happy holidays, everybody. It's actually greetings from suburban New York City at this point. I'm up here.
Oh my goodness!
Visiting the family, so yeah, up here. I saw the. I know y'all were expecting me to kind of file a little live report from Brooklyn last night, Monday Night Raw, and I wound up. I was going to head out there and kind of have a boys' night out and visit Rudy Charles. Who is, or Dan Engler, who is, actually he's not even Dan Engler. I guess he's just nameless ref number 10 right now since referees don't have names anymore. But Rudy got into town Sunday, actually, so I went and we had some dinner up on one of my Mama Adams special cheesecakes, authentic New York cheesecakes, which are
nicely done.
Often visit the boys when they're in town and give them a little comfort food, so. But he got in Sunday, so I didn't wind up going out there last night. But I think I actually have some pretty good news that's relevant to Georgia, actually, and it may result in Georgia wrestling thriving like never before.
Please, yes.
Yes, I don't know if you all have a drum roll there, if that's in the budget, but it probably deserves one. David Young will be retiring this year. And we're working on putting together a retirement tour. He had actually, I think it's going to be focused in Georgia. He mentioned a couple weeks ago, asked if I would come down there and do some shows if he got them lined up. So I think we'll take the act on the road for a little bit and then try to figure out some kind of fitting way to have a last match for a good organization, even if we have to do it ourselves. And hopefully cap off. I thought I'd mention that right off the bat because that's more of a, like I said, he spent a lot of time in Georgia and he specifically wanted to, do his final matches down there. So that's the big news there.
Well, that's phenomenal. The master of the spine buster, David Young, going to be doing a last tour. Paul, did you happen to catch? I know you probably weren't at the Brooklyn Raw. Did you happen to catch it on TV or any part of it?
You know what? I caught. That's hilarious you asked, because I caught Big Show and Ryback about halfway through, and almost immediately just was an audible groan when, as Michael Cole was putting over the fact that Big Show was probably one of the favorites to win the Royal Rumble and go on to main event WrestleMania this year. And I just, that's just one of those guys that they've rehabilitated 1,000 times. And if you've, unless you've come on board as a fan of the WWE universe in the last, 2-3 years, you've already seen this, half a dozen times, probably more, maybe, in the last 10-15 years. So it was just right off the bat, I just was, oh man. And then I really was shocked, because I looked at the time and you'd think something like that would be the main event, and just the visual of those two guys in that environment, and I'm guessing it was probably maybe 2/3 of the way through or something like that. But it's just amazing that it looks so major league, and that it's on free TV, and it was going to be 4 minutes that I saw. And it, I didn't, obviously, I don't follow it close enough to have the background on why a countout loss gained entry into the Royal Rumble. So if anyone can fill me in on that, that would at least explain my what I saw last night.
I wish I could, Paul. You definitely caught the one of the low points of the show. And then to compound that, right before that, they had Big Show come out and interrupt The Miz, and then beat up Heath Slater or somebody else, and then
cussed everybody out. I think if they do the match, they did a great segment where he came out. There was sort of like one guy came out after another to increasing pops. So it's like Goldust came out and interrupted Ryback's promo, and then this guy came out and that guy came out, and then Big Show came out, threw them all out of the ring, sort of declared that he was entering himself as number one in the Royal Rumble, which got a pop out of me, because then I went, good, he has no chance of winning, excellent. And then and a match wasn't necessary, but for some reason they did a match. But yeah, I was going to say, overall, the timing of the show was actually very reassuring to me. It feels like they've gotten a little bit of pepper back, just a little bit of pepper back. I don't know what Larry thought about it, but.
Yeah, I did. I did. I thought that was, setting that segment aside, they did a lot of things well and they continue to make good use of Vince and Stephanie, and, doing pretty well with Roman Reigns, I think. I don't really want to see Roman Reigns in Sheamus again, which I guess we're going to see with Vince as the special referee. But, I think we lost Mr. Platt.
You kind of hate to turn it on and get turned off, and then, this is sort of the time of year where things really start rolling. So I was hoping that it was just sort of an anomaly that I had caught, so that's good. I caught the low point. I would have figured the Miz thing was the low point. I saw that. The bumper. I saw the bumper going to the break for the Miz, and I, honest to God, I just thought, oh Jesus. Well, there's a piss break if I had been out there, for sure. But again, it's not like he doesn't have talent and isn't good. It's just, there's been so many of those Miz segments that were total flop. Thought of sitting through a 5-minute segment there, so I think I flipped, and that must have been what happened. I came back in the middle of that Big Show and Ryback.
One other thing before we move off Raw, I wondered what you thought, Steve, of them doing the surprise win of Neville beating Owens.
I actually saw that as evidence of. They're beginning to understand that it's stories. So it's like Neville basically got a 30-second win, it's kind of a surprise roll-up out of the pop-up powerbomb. And then Kevin Owens proceeded to just beat the living crap out of him, which eventually brought Dean Ambrose. Look, I think I mentioned to my wife, It's something that's flowing into something else, which is flowing into something else. And I go, and if they're smart, later on they will revisit this. And my guess is Kevin Owens will attack Dean Ambrose again by the end of the show. And then that happened. And she went, wow. And I went, yeah, they're finally beginning to put together feuds in advance of the blow off instead of the week before. Like they're giving you a chance to anticipate, you know. It's sort of that, I mean, Paul, you can attest to this. If like the best booked stuff, I call it one third, one third, one third. It's sort of like you're starting one third of the card. You're starting new stuff. About a third of the card is you're getting things really going or continuing angles. And then, you know, you're roughly paying off one or two things, either because they're not working or because it's the natural end point for whatever you're doing. And so the show is constantly this churning thing where things are moving up and down and things just feel in motion. And I guess that's how I would describe that Neville thing, is it's everything you wanted. That loss to Kevin Owens did absolutely nothing to hurt Owens. If anything, it helped Neville a little bit, and then it moved Owens into the thing that you really want to see him do, which is to fight Dean Ambrose. So I thought it was well done. I mean, it was kind of booking 101, but they need some booking 101. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was nice mm-hmm. to see.
You know,
yes,
that,
instead of constantly skipping the chapters.
Just touch on like how you were, you know, laying it out there, one third, one third, one third. I totally think that you should have your payoff start with that. What's going to be the payoff at the end of this, and almost kind of work backwards.
Yeah.
Or have your, you know, have your first third and then immediately figure out what the last third is going to be. And then you can do all your maintenance in between there, depending on how it's going and how people are reacting to it. And, you know, I mean, you're always going to run into things, somebody gets hurt or something like that, where you don't reach the payoff. But to not have a payoff in mind at the beginning, I think, is a huge mistake. I was talking to Bert Prentice a long time about this. And if you guys remember Global in Texas, when that started on ESPN, whatever, it's probably 20 years ago now, they had an angle involving someone called the Boss. And the whole startup, say your first third, was speculation on who is the boss, who's the puppet master, who's pulling the strings. And I had asked Bert one time, I told him, I said, I loved all that. And I loved Global, like at the start, it was something different. And I had asked him about that, and he told me that, and I think he was on sort of like the committee or maybe just contributing ideas, but he was certainly heavily involved with the overall thing. I think it was the Joe Pedicino thing. And he told me that they never had a boss. They didn't have anybody in mind to even for the payoff when they started that thing. They were just going to figure it out as they went. And then I don't think they ever did. And then they wound up, what was it, Max Andrews or something like that. But I think you should always have that payoff in mind. And you can do your little cliffhangers sort of along the way.
Well, I'm glad you explained that, because Max Andrews was certainly a letdown, so I guess he was never even really the idea. They didn't have an idea.
No. And not like, boy, it was supposed to be Hulk Hogan and Max Andrews. No, they didn't have anything, so they didn't know where they were going with it, other than to create intrigue and, you know, people talking, I guess, which is great. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, you definitely got to have that ending in mind.
So, tell us a little bit about what's going on in Tennessee, and particularly with Friday.
I don't know. No, it's actually it looks pretty good right now. It's Crimson, formerly Tommy Mercer, started up a company with a gentleman up in Clarksville who runs MMA shows. I believe his name is Mike, and the last name escapes me. But they recently ran their second show up in Clarksville. And the first one, I didn't make it up to this one. I think it was probably 2 weeks ago now, 2-3 weeks ago. It was really good, probably, you know, about 350, 400 people looking at it on the business end. And no huge names or anything like that. You know, obviously you had Crimson, but you had like Crazy Steve from TNA, Bram, And then just a good quality like undercard, Jeremiah Plunkett, Chase Stevens, Sean Schultz. And so it was just solid, you know, beginning to end. And as a fan experience, it was great. Very professional. The first thing I noticed, you know, just coming in the building, had the ropes taped up like candy canes. It was a Christmas theme show. Little details like that that just kind of add something, you know, to the atmosphere. So he gets it, and he's got a good thing going there. And the week before that, I had run in Portland, Tennessee, and we had probably about 300 in the building. I know there was 34 comps. There was 34 response kids came back. So you figure about 250 paid, and, you know, it was Bill Dundee, Ricky Morton, Crimson. That was really all that got pushed. So that's a pretty healthy, you know, and it was a fundraiser, but it's a pretty healthy turnout. It was a mentoring group that we did a fundraiser for, raised $1,000 for them, and gave out 200 free gifts to kids 10 and under. And you go to a lot of these shows where there's a free Christmas gift and you're getting a squirt gun from the dollar store or whatever, you know. And but TNA was really cool, and they always have been anytime we've sort of asked. But they donated like 200 different gifts. And I mean, it was stuff from like Willow masks to Eric Young beards to Hardy T-shirts to, you know, like quality stuff, DVDs and whatnot. So that was awesome. So overall, and I know you, I heard you mentioning you saw the Leah Hewlin Santa, Mrs. Santa Claus outfit. So that was a highlight for sure for everyone, including Ricky Morton.
Yes.
Yeah. So I brought her back. We were going to give her an entrance, which Jason James was my MC for the evening, Jimmy J from TNA, formerly from TNA. And he had come up with some entrance music for Leah, and I think it was Blurred Lines or something like that, you know? That was hilarious, man. Like, so anyway, I'm bringing her back there to give her an entrance. She'd been out at her table all night. And, I mean, she didn't have one foot through that curtain on the side, and, you know, Ricky Morton happened to be standing there, and he just goes, "Well, goddamn!" And so he goes, "Well, who might you be?" You know, or no, actually, she probably, you know, she'd seen him on the poster and probably Googled him to find out, because I don't think, you know, it's not like she has been a wrestling fan of the past. She definitely is now. But so she, you know, knew who Ricky was when she saw him, and she said, "Oh, you must be Ricky." And he goes, "Well, yes, ma'am, I am. Who might you be?" So I introduced them, and then Ricky said, "Well, Paul, I know what I want for Christmas now." So. Along with every other red-blooded American male in the building, we had a good turnout there, and you know, Tommy and I were talking, and we just thought, well, here we just did, you know, back-to-back weeks, completely different crowd, probably 45 minutes away from each other, maybe an hour away from each other, and I think the same night that I ran, I think Bert did real well. We had Ricky and Bill Dundee double shot, and it was about 45 minutes away from one another. So he had a healthy show. I had a healthy show. The following week, TNT had a healthy show. If you had enough, you know, even if you just kept it two or three, maybe add in one other, you know, company that could keep that going like that, you might have two quality shows that draw every weekend. So I don't, you know, I'm not saying I all of a sudden want to throw my hat back into running a show, you know, even once a month, but someone could, and I think if they did it right, obviously there's enough fans to support it, put it that way.
Cool. A couple questions for you. Bill Dundee, the guy's 72 years old. Did he wrestle? I mean,
He does wrestle. As a matter of fact, he wrestled out there on that first, when Bert ran that first show in Jackson, Tennessee. I'm trying to think of what the main event was. The Baller and Tommy Dreamer. Bill wrestled underneath. And I had him come sign autographs, and then we did a little angle with the Bad Boys Club, which is Shane Andrews from Knoxville and Nick Taylor from Knoxville, and Tony Lucchesio. So Tony went out, and Pop Reno Riggins, who was in the house, Pop Reno by calling Dundee rigor mortis. Reno said, "You just call him rigor mortis?" I said, "Probably." I hadn't heard it. But we did a little angle at the end of the night where those guys got in there. meaning Dundee and Ricky, to do a little promo and thank the fans for coming out, and we just sent the heels out, and they did a little, maybe, you know, 5-minute match, you know, just a basic tag thing with Ricky and Bill. But Bill, I mean, I guess you'd be surprised at you know, 72, but I don't know anymore. I mean, you got Funk at like 70 or 71 or 72, whatever. And so, if guys have never stopped taking bumps, it's a little different than if, you know, he had been off for 10 years and came back and tried it. I'm sure he'd shatter to pieces, you know. But he never stopped, and he does not want to stop. He does not. And I'm telling you, in every show I've ever been on with him or booked him on has drawn, ever. I've never seen a flop with Bill Dundee on it, ever.
Hmm. Oh, and one other question, is the Kim Thomason version of Saw still taping in anywhere in the Nashville area? I know they had been over in Cookeville. Do you know what's up with them?
Anthony Wayne, who worked as a referee for me and I think was working as a ref for Saw over the last 2 years. He also wrestles, but he's tiny. So it's a great, you know, it's a guy that can actually take bumps and knows what's going on, and he makes for a great rep. I was talking to him about it, and I think he had set up maybe like a high school show or a middle school show, something, yeah, a school at any rate. And I believe they taped a bunch of TV at that. And then I think, or maybe that was somebody else's setup, and Anthony has one coming up that they're also going to tape at. So I believe so. I believe it's still in that early morning time slot. I'm not sure what the exact time is, like Saturday night / Sunday morning, I think, or either Sunday night / Monday morning. But as far as I know, they've taped some new stuff. And I'm sure it's online somewhere, too.
Because I do see they're still releasing shows under the name NWA Inferno. The last one was from a promotion called New South, I want to say.
That would have been Kentucky.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it looks to me like they're just moving around to different spots to do the taping, but they're still taping regularly.
The New South thing, do you remember Farron Fox?
Oh, of course.
That was his deal.
Oh.
So I think, you know, there was a few times, like when I was there, if we were found ourselves either short on footage for whatever reason, you know, somebody stole all the equipment and cameras, or just to name one example, if we found ourselves short, I'd go out and tape it, like, you know, like a Mike Cerci show. So I think it's more along the lines of that kind of thing, like Farron had a show, and so, hey, can we come up and, you know, shoot some footage or something like that? But that was, I don't know how that did, but that was Farron's deal up there.
Cool.
Well, Paul, I can't thank you for coming on again. Larry and I are about to go over all the year-end award stuff, which is going to take a little while, but is there anything else you want to talk about or plug before you go?
No, it's just like I said, that David and I are going to look, you know, for some dates. So if anybody's interested in booking Dave, just hit him up on Facebook or holler at him or whatever. And I think that's it. You know, I caught the tail end of the right before I came on, and this is going back quite a while, over 10 years. But I had had two stints in rehab. So I'd be happy to give a perspective, you know, I'm at some point.
Oh, please do.
You know,
yes.
Consider myself a success story as far as in that regard, just getting that monkey off your back, regardless of what, you know, what you wind up going on to do. That's an accomplishment in itself for
yes.
anyone. So to then, you know, to be able to go back and resume a career or find a new one or whatever you go on to do. So, you know, in the future, if that comes up again, I'd be happy to talk about that experience itself. But nope, other than that, you know, Happy New Year to y'all, and I'll keep you posted on the Tennessee scene and whatever else is happening, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, Happy New Year to you, Paul. Thank you so much for being on again.
Thank you, guys. Talk to you soon.
Happy New Year, Mr. Adam. Right. Talk to you later.
Nicely done. Sounds like Tennessee is hopping. You know, I made this joke when Larry and I were talking before the show that, you know, Peach State put on this great show and they drew 200. And I said 200 is the new 400 in Georgia wrestling. And I think in many ways that's true. It's interesting that in Tennessee they can have a couple of shows that draw in that 253-350 range as a normal thing.
I can tell you, though, one of the things that stood out to me about Tried and True is that that has not been the normal thing in Tennessee to draw that well. Other than the Mark Anthony shows, which he ran once a year over there in Cookeville and brought in names, and he did very well because he did a hell of a job promoting. But typically around the Nashville area, I mean, they have not been drawing, you know, 300 people at shows. I guess Burt does sometimes. Because Burt just Burt's a great promoter, but that's not typical.
Hello? Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Something happened there. I would like to take Paul up on that, talking about his rehab experience sometimes, because that's something he's never talked about publicly.
I think it's very apropos to what's going on. And it's funny because, I mean, it's no huge secret. Like, I've never taken a drink, never gotten high, none of that. And I still find it so stunning how people, or just any of it, people are so quick to condemn. I know it's a part of the culture. I mean, the people don't even make distinctions between guys who have sort of done time for stuff and really, like, already paid the punishment. I'm always curious about why people have this instinct to sort of wreck people. It's one thing if who we were talking about was, you know, taking advantage of people or engaging in sort of bad behavior currently, but that's not the case at all. And that's the part that really gets to me. It's like, okay, you want to protect everybody from somebody. I get that. I don't get not being able to acknowledge that people change. If the belief is that people never change, then fuck. I'm sorry. Like, if you're involved in the pro wrestling business, here's a hint. It started off in the gutter. It started off as a con. You know, wrestling people are always bitching and moaning because they're like, you know, it's fake. It's like, I hate when people say it's fake. Why do people still get on pro wrestling? Well, I can tell you, because pro wrestling for decades made money basically duping people out of their money. And so even though that's no longer the case, I certainly can understand where the general public would be like, you know what? Pro wrestling used to, I mean, it's kind of a shady, dirty business that attracts shady, dirty people, present company excluded, of course. And, but God, there are guys the last 2 years, there have been a number of great redemptive stories. And for somebody to sort of interject themselves into that, I mean, fuck that guy, frankly. And you know, maybe I'll catch heat from that guy and whatever, but bring him on. Because it's nobody's perfect. That's like how the cliche goes. But trying to knock the legs out from the guys who are trying to make this thing better, I just don't see the point, frankly. So I was glad Paul said something about that. I thought that was great.
Yeah. Well, shall we move on to talking about the...
Absolutely.
...the nominations, the final ballot for the Georgia Wrestling Awards for 2015. We'll start from the bottom and head towards the top.
Yes.
Announcer of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Jonathan Feltner.
Yeah.
Of course, who's been at a number of different promotions, Flatline,
number of them.
Anarchy. Yeah. Brett Wolverton, the former Anarchy play by play guy. John Johnson, former Anarchy color guy. Scott Hensley from the Scenic City Invitational. and Ben Masters from All Star Wrestling Network and others. Those are the nominees for Announcer of the Year.
Nice. You know, Scott Hensley, of course, I've called matches with him at Deep South. Great guy, very knowledgeable guy. And, of course, the first three, you know, John Johnson, Brett Wolverton, and Jonathan Feltner, I think, you know, not that I'm gonna do a full disclosure and get it up tomorrow, sort of explaining who these guys are and what I think. Feltner in particular, I think, gotten out there to a number of different shows, and when, by his own admission, kind of didn't know what he was doing to a guy that really contributes to a show. Now, Larry, you go to any number of shows where ring announcer is horrible, and it completely detracts from the experience. But Feltner is one of those guys, I think, who shows up, and just by his mere presence and professionalism, he makes a show look better. He's just one of those things that just, he makes the show better by being there. And I can't think of a bigger compliment for a ring announcer.
Agreed. That jumped out at me when he first started at APW, when he didn't know that much what he was doing, but he brought something extra to the show, which was really nice.
Nice.
Next category, Referee of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
A first-time nominee, Madman Mason. Peach State, AWE, UIW, and others. Guy gets around.
Popular guy. Yeah, he does.
A guy who started the year as a manager and ended up as a referee and really didn't ref much in Georgia, but he's a very good ref, Kevin Pierce.
Yes.
A multi-time winner in the past, very well-known, D. Byers.
Yes.
Anarchy and Southern Fried referee Ken Wallace. And Peach State, NWA Atlanta, and others, Tristan Michaels.
Yeah, I think, you know, Tristan Michaels has really come on, and he's in any number of places. And Ken Wallace, I think getting out there and doing Southern Fried, kind of separating himself from D in that way. D used to referee at a number of different promotions, but there is no more PWR, and I don't think he gets out to APW as much anymore. So, I mean, you know, Tristan and Ken, I think, are the front runners there, but it's nice to see some. It's nice that we have a number of referees to talk about, whereas before, generally, it was, you know, it was like three or four guys, and that was it, you know. And it's kind of anybody's ball game, I think.
Yeah, and a category that through the years has been dominated by Anarchy / Wildside, and of course that's no longer going to be the case, so it kind of opens things up, too. Live event. Anarchy Wrestling Hostile Environment. The Scenic City Invitational.
Mm-hmm.
Empire Wrestling's Tooth and Nail 4. That was their spring mega event. Platinum Championship Wrestling Sacred Ground 6. And Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment's Show of the Year, with which we, of course, opened the show talking about.
You know, I think this, it is exciting to see, because I got to be honest, you know, I always wrote that full disclosure where I try to come up with nominees myself, and it was usually kind of hard to do. And or you would have shows that were in there more for kind of the show that they were instead of the quality of the show. I'm thinking of, like, you know, like the Ted Allen Memorials, which wasn't really a show of the year. It was more like, well, everybody got together and was on that show. But this year, between the Scenic City tournament, between AWE pulling off, you know, Show of the Year 2, and the timing of that is, you know, can't be denied. Is that going to be fresh in the voter's mind? Certainly it's going to be up there. And then, you know, Hostile Environment, which was Anarchy's last show, which has the advantage of, one, it was Anarchy's last show, and two, I think that was a show that exceeded all expectations and allowed Anarchy to close with a great deal of dignity and kind of pulled, I mean, is this safe to say, kind of pulled Charles out of the fire, as, you know, his tenure would have been remembered much more negatively as Anarchy owner if not for that last show.
I'd agree with that. Yeah. Yeah. Before we do the next category, I do want to give hats off to Brian Slack, who tirelessly handled the gathering of the nominees. And I also want to, you know, hats off to him for coming up with the nomination process. I think, you know, we had some hiccups with it last year, but I think this year it ran very well and produced a really top-quality ballot that came out of this nomination process. So thank you, Brian. And Brian, of course, will also be handing the voting process, and I'll give his email address, and we'll have it on the website too, but I'll give it at when we finish going through the categories. Promotion of the Year, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, Peach State Wrestling Alliance, Empire Wrestling Entertainment, Southern Fried Championship Wrestling, and WrestleMerica.
I saw WrestleMerica on there in a couple of categories. That one, it's hard to deny the fact that they draw the biggest crowds. I don't know, it's interesting. I mean, like, that's an interesting mix of Southern Fried. I mean, I guess it's got to be on the list, but it's hard to deny that last year it was Anarchy and Southern Fried tied for promotion of the year. And it's obvious that Southern Fried has sort of taken a step back in many ways, and it kind of opened it up for Peach State. But, you know, AWE certainly finished as strong as you could possibly finish. So, and Empire is sort of become a standard of just a great promotion that runs a ton of shows. So, and again, boy, the voting this year, I got to say, I think this is the most interesting year that we've had in any number of years. There are no gimmies. There are no, like, oh, you know, so-and-so wins every year, and it looks like they're going to win again. It's wide open. I would be shocked if more than one or two categories repeated the winner from last year.
Yes, and unlike some past years, no one promotion dominating the categories, as we've had sometimes with Anarchy and with Rampage. One other thing about the promotion of the year related to WrestleMerica, I've noticed over the last month or 6 weeks, the number of reads that a WrestleMerica or a results gets has gone way up. You know, the typical results posts don't get like a tremendous amount, but the WrestleMerica, just even the results posts, have gotten a lot of reads. So a little bit interest seems to be picking up in that promotion. Best Booker Award. Nominees are Rick Michaels, Peach State Wrestling, Andrew Alexander, Empire Wrestling, Murder One, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment, Matt Hankins, Platinum Championship Wrestling, and from Anarchy Wrestling, Todd Sexton and Bill Behrens.
What can you say? I mean, that's as solid a group as has been in the last few years. And again, all guys that have wildly different styles. You know, Rick Michaels would seem to be the front runner. He's certainly booked for the most promotions and made a difference in those promotions. So, I would say Rick is probably the front runner for that one. But it'll be interesting to see who garners the votes when it comes down to it.
Best Promoter Award, Shane Knowles, Peach State Wrestling Alliance, Luke Gallows and Marty Miller for WrestleAmerica, Drew and Susan Mullinex, Empire Wrestling, Woody Hollander for Deep South and for Georgia Premier, and Charles Anschutz for Southern Fried and Anarchy.
Yeah. I was looking back at past winners of Promoter, and it was always the guy that drew the most. That was traditionally it. Like, Scotty East won back in the day in, like, 2009, and I know why he won, because that's when SECW was drawing huge numbers. On that standard alone, I guess, you know, you got to look at Marty Miller. But, you know, Peach State to me is the interesting story where they've sort of come out of venue issues and all the rest of it and been that show that's become number one in the state, whatever that means. They've done it. And they've survived the venue moves. Again, fascinating to see who's going to win. Certainly, you know, Charles is very visible, which is a huge part of promotion. And Southern Fried, has managed to, they took a hard hit, but managed to kind of come out of it on the other side. And they have a very loyal fan base that he has helped establish, which is the job of a promoter, undeniably. So can't wait to see who gets the votes in that one, too.
Best manager of LA. Perennial winner, Jeff G. Bailey, tops off this category.
Yeah.
Miss Rachel Freeman. Al Getz. Two first-time nominees, I believe these are first-time nominees, Quasimandisco and Logan Chase.
Oh, Logan Chase made the cut.
Yep.
That's really interesting to me. Like, all five of those guys, again, Jeff G. is the perennial choice, and there's a reason for that. And if anything, if he does not win, it'll be because people don't want to vote for him. Because, I mean, not because he doesn't deserve the votes. I mean, his face turn, he's been active in a number of promotions, Peach State, PCW, you know, obviously Anarchy. He was the focal point of Anarchy and all of that. But Rachel had a phenomenal year managing, just a fantastic year, sort of being the true foil at Anarchy. Quasi, I always think he's the best kept secret. Like, he's been the guy for PCW, and he's all over sacred ground. And the reason for that is, he's the guy that they hated, and now he's the guy that they love the most. Interesting. Interesting year for managers flipping from face to heel and vice versa. But Al Getz, to me, that's a great story, is Al bursting back on the scene and being a big effing deal in NWA Atlanta and Peach State, and being a part of – and that angle that he did with Tyson Dean was undeniably great. Would you agree, Larry?
Yeah, that was wonderful. And then, and also in WrestleAmerica, winding up wrestling Rachel, and then, of course, breaking his leg to end his year.
Well,
poor Al. But Al did make his first public appearance since the injury over at the AWE show. He was there with his cast on. So, Most Improved Wrestler Award. I got to say, when I looked at the list of suggestions, this category – five couldn't really do this category justice. There were so many guys and women that deserved to be on this list, but we had to boil it down to five, and they are Tyson Dean, Gunnar Miller, Kevin Blue, Jacob Ashworth, and Anthony Henry.
Damn, Larry, is it safe to say this has been the best year as far as the most improved category? Because there were years, remember the year where, like, Drew Atler tied with Fred Yehi, where it was just like Fred won, not because he was the most improved, but because they didn't kind of know, it was felt that Fred kind of, that was my take on it, that a lot of voters were like, well, Fred seems like he deserves something, and there wasn't anybody that really stood out in the improvement. Now you've got, I mean, any one of those, it's a cliche, but in that category, absolutely true. If any of those five people won it, they would completely deserve it. I don't think you'd get an argument out of me. You can make an argument for any of them. Kevin Blue, I think, is the guy who is the most unlikely main eventer, who has, through sheer force of will and talent, made himself a main eventer, which is why I would give him the slight edge over everybody, except for perhaps Tyson Dean, who did the same thing. So that's the only way I can determine who I will vote for in that category, is who made the biggest jump on the cards that they're a part of. But I mean, both of those guys, unbelievable. But Jacob Ashworth, undeniable draw, undeniably liked. You know, just who are the other two on the list? Just to remind me.
Let me go back here. Gunnar Miller's on there, and
Gunnar Miller.
Yeah.
I mean, Anthony Henry, I actually wrote to, like, privately and just said, I just wanted to, because, you know, he got a lot of knocks for being charismaless at one point, which was pretty true. But he puts on consistently the best match. Like, he's figured it out. He's a guy who I think has figured it out, that it's not just about the best work rate match on the card, but
right.
being – being important enough that what you do in your match takes on an added significance, and then being able to deliver in the ring on top of it. And, I mean, I can't say enough about that. And Gunnar Miller, I mean, a guy who is a focus of angles and who just exudes, he's got the it thing. And, I mean, that it thing is in such rare supply nowadays. You kind of got to acknowledge a guy that's got it and is willing to work to get better. So, again, I think that might be my favorite category of them all this year, as far as just five people who absolutely deserve the award.
Best tag team or stable? Of course, past winners, Washington, but multi-time winners, the Washington Bullets, John and Trey Williams. The Hierarchy of Jimmy Rave, Murder mm-hmm. One, Iceberg, Chip Day, and Priscilla Kelly. White Rose, Chip Day. Man, two different stables.
Yeah.
Chip Day, Corey Hollis, and Ryan Vega. Beautiful Bald Besties, Michael Stevens and Zach Edwards. And Big F and Deal, Jeter and Brian Blaze.
Something that's a lot of fun is, you know, we always say best tag team or stable when that category really had become the tag team award. In fact, I would say that in the history of that award, only tag teams have won it. But this year, you have two groups that very well could win it, and I wouldn't be mad if they did win it, in the Hierarchy, who, you know, AWE centers their booking around the Hierarchy. And White Rose, which is one of my favorite things going on anywhere, especially at Empire. So just great stuff. Great stuff this year.
The Ted Allen Legends Award. And let me mention here that this award is not automatically given every year. The winner must receive 50% of the votes to win. Nominated this year, Robert Gibson, Woody Hollander, Jeff G. Bailey, Rick Michaels, and Stephen Platinum.
Well, you know, now that Bill has won that award, which he should have years ago, now it's interesting to me. Now that Bill, who's the guy that absolutely should have had it, has won it, now it's wide open. Who are the guys that are the mentors? This is one of those awards that I feel especially close to, not just because I would want to win it, but because I think it's truly acknowledging something that happens that only people in wrestling in Georgia would know about. Who are the guys who are really helping people along? You know, I think Woody is so beloved, and just from Empire to Deep Southern to multiple states, they love Woody. Rick Michaels is one of those guys who is now an inspiration and a leader in so many ways. But I can't stop talking and sticking my nose in people's business. I think one thing all of those people on that list have in common is we're all people who, it's a cliche, we love wrestling, and we kind of eat and breathe the shit. And that's exactly who should win that award. Again, you know, one person has to get 50% of the votes, and there was a year or two there where nobody got enough. I hope, I hope the right person gets the requisite amount of votes to get that 50, because I just think, you know, it's that award in its own way is kind of the most significant of all of them, in my opinion.
Best female performer. Mm. Pandora, Kiara Hogan, Amber Gallows, Miss Rachel Freeman, and Dementia DeRose.
Yeah, I'm that jerk, so I'll just say it. There's three. It's Rachel, it's Pandora, and it's Dementia. Leaning towards Rachel or Dementia. This was Dementia's breakout year. You could have put her in the most improved category as well, and I don't think anyone would have blinked an eye. And, again, it's an award that in some years, if it had been around for a number of years, would have been pretty thin as far as, like, you would have had to, like, throw a valet or two in there. But there's a number of women working in Georgia who are going to develop and have their time. If Kira Hogan sticks with this thing, she's going to be the front runner for that award in a year or two. And Priscilla Kelly, if she sticks with the thing, is going to eventually be up there. But right now, it really does feel like Dementia De Rose has hit her stride, Rachel clearly has hit her stride, and Pandora is perennial. So,
another category that would have been thin maybe in some past years, but not this year. I can think of more than five for this next one. Best Male Performer Award. Simon Sermon, Sal Renaro, Ashton Starr, Billy Buck, and Tommy Too Much.
This is an award I feel I'm always very vocal about because I always feel in years past people kind of didn't get what it was supposed to be. You know, it's you've picked sort of the Georgia personalities, legend personalities associated with each one of these awards. And this one is associated with Tommy Rich, who again, wasn't that guy that was, you know, built like a brick shit house. He was the guy that got over with charisma and performing. And that's what this is supposed to be, the Male Performer Award. And if you look at the five people in that category, all of them, I mean, they got the gift of gab. They have the ability to gain heat through what they do physically, verbally, and connecting with crowds. That's what the award is supposed to be about. And again, all five of those guys, you know, Ashton doing a great job at AWE in particular. Tommy Too Much. Larry, 5 years ago, if I'd said, hey, Larry, Tommy Too Much is going to be a guy who's going to be a champion of a number of promotions, and it will actually work and be phenomenal. Who would have?
Yeah.
No way, right?
No way. No freaking way.
I mean, when you look at that group of, like, the exotic ones, you got Rick Michaels, you know, Stoney, you got Simon, you got Rick. Out of those four, I mean, nobody would have thought, like, Tommy Too Much is going to be the guy, you know. Simon Sermon, of course, can't say enough good things about. I mean, nobody does more with less. And I mean that as a total compliment than Simon Sermon. And just great stuff all around. You know, a guy that I think that could be in that category, except for the fact that he only does this gimmick in one promotion, and that's the Carpenter. I just want to put that out there, that that guy is just sort of an awesome, enigmatic talent. But again, he only does the Carpenter at PCW, so I can understand why he's not on the list.
He was on my personal five that I submitted to the Carpenter, because I do think that's an exceptional character that he's doing, even though if it is only in PCW. Best Technician Award, Todd Sexton, Corey Hollis, Slim J, Fred Yehi, and Jimmy Rave.
Again, another category that it used to be like two or three people, and Kyle would win it every year. Now, I mean, Larry, who do you give that to?
I know.
Look at that list. I mean, I'm glad Slim is on that list. I think Slim deserves to be on that list. I think he's a guy who's overlooked as a spot guy, and that is could not be less accurate at this point in his career.
No.
Slim's series with Fred, amazing. Yeah. Slim's runs at Southern Fried, phenomenal. There's a reason that guy wins titles where he goes, because you want to see him perform. You know, he's gotten looked at by Ring of Honor. He's just one of these guys. He's trained guys. He's the guy that you want to train people. Corey Hollis, of course, just perennially on the list. And Kyle Matthews always on that list. Jimmy Rave, of course, I mean, he's riding it this year. And, you know, a lot of his stuff is, you know, some of the stuff that he's famous for, like stalling in matches and blah, blah, blah. Dude, that's just a part of working. And nobody works a match bell to bell like Jimmy Rave. So, again, great category. Number of great nominees this year.
And finally, the Overall Wrestler Award. AJ Steele, Tyson Dean, Jeter, Chip Day, and Jimmy Rave.
What can you say? I mean, you got guys on that list that wrestled hour-long matches. You've got guys on that list that have shed reputations. Like, I'm thinking of AJ Steele, who was seen as primarily a tag team guy not all that long ago, right? And now you think of him as a main event performer who, when he gets bounced from one promotion and goes to another, it's news. You know, he's a main event guy who's been on this show more than once and puts up the claim, hey, do people buy a ticket to see AJ Steele? And the answer is yes. Jimmy Rave, of course, has had a year that's off the charts, really. But, I mean, when you look at anybody on that list, Chip Day. Chip Day is a part of two, not one, but two of the factions or tag teams of the year. Wrestled, his match with Cedric, wasn't that your favorite one at Show of the Year, too?
It was my favorite match there, and his match with Carlito at the Superstars of Wrestling, I believe, was one of my favorite matches on that show. Yeah, I mean, guys had another guy who's had an outstanding year.
Yeah. So, I mean, just a great year all around. I got to say, and of course, it's so fresh because it's this year's awards. This might be the most competitive as far as any number of people in all of the categories could win and should win. And that's a lot of fun to see.
Just a couple things before we sign off. Send your award votes to Brian Slack, GWH, at yahoo.com, exactly like it sounds. Brian Slack, GWH, at yahoo.com. We will post this up on the site. Remember, this is a vote by folks within the wrestling industry, so to speak, in Georgia. It's not a fan vote. And write-ins are allowed. So if you feel like there's somebody that should win that we didn't, that's not on the ballot, it's fine to write them in.
Absolutely. And I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, next week, we're going to announce those award winners, and we'll have, no doubt, a number of the winners. Can we do this? Can we not have someone on the show that is not going to win an award? I'm still hurting about that, like, 4 years later. I feel like I need to see a therapist about that. And, yeah. So next week we're going to announce those awards. That's going to be a ton of fun. I'm definitely going to set up some funny stuff for that. And, you know, maybe we'll play some Izzy High more than once. But we'll have some, we'll get a hold of some of the winners promos that we can find and take a listen. And, So a number of you, get your thank you speeches ready. And to the person who, in the nomination process, who voted a straight ticket for OSWA, go fuck yourself. I see you. Well, Larry, I think it's going to be a great year. I'm excited to see who's going to win and get those votes into Brian. And all this information is going to be up, of course, on Georgia Wrestling History. Anything you want to say? Where are you going to be this weekend, Larry? I'm going to be at PCW, clearly. What are you going to be doing?
I'm going to either be at PCW or Southern Fried. I have not figured out which, but one of those two Saturday night, yeah.
Oh, Southern Fried's got a big car. They're starting the year off right. So we'll see where Larry goes, but whatever happens, me and Larry will be here next week with a number of the category winners on the Tipping Point. Always an exciting way to start the new year. And I hope everybody's having a happy holidays and a Merry Christmas and all that good stuff and has a happy and safe new year. So from all of us at the Tipping Point, thank you very much. Get those votes in, and we'll see you next week on the Tipping Point.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
We do.